Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized, right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. If you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Then go to the archives page. Hey, we're talking about pasteurized milk here. If you're normal at all, you know that pasteurized milk is good for you, and raw milk is the kiss of death. I've taken the other side to that story. I said, you know, that's got some truth to it. There's no doubt about that. There's some historical truth that's involved in this story. But like most stories, there's some more of the story that you haven't heard yet. And I thought, well, let me bring out that other part of the story. So in this segment of the story that we're talking about here, just how safe is pasteurized milk anyway? We believe that it's safe. I mean, it's like going into to the hamburger store. You believe that the hamburger that you're going to eat here is safe. And, you know, for the most part, they are. The McDonald's people in these chain stores, they sell billions and billions and billions of hamburgers a year. And it doesn't kill a whole lot of people. It just kills a few. You know, a few people get salmonella or something. Or you'll hear about, there's a big thing in the news today, salmonella poisoning from eggs coming from a particular farm or group of farms up in Iowa. And that happens, you know, once in a while. But by and large, if you stop and think about food safety here in the United States, it's pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good. Now, there was some spinach that got contaminated, and there was some lettuce that got contaminated, and once in a while there's some hamburger, and there's some eggs and one thing and another, and there's a lot of people that get sick. But, you know, you got 300 million people eating three meals a day here. And, you know, 300 times three, you know, that's a billion meals a year. And how many people die from those meals? Well, there's a few thousand. I think it's about 5,000 a year, which on a scale of, you know, about 1 to 10 doesn't even come up on the radar screen. And people have been drinking pasteurized milk here in the United States for 100 years. Started in 1889. It got into full bloom about 1950. So, you know, you've been drinking pasteurized milk for 60 years, and there's a result that comes from it. You know, you're going to get a result from it. There is a negative result, but there's a positive result. And the positive result that we have seen is that contagious disease from milk has virtually disappeared. Getting cholera or typhoid fever or something like that is just unheard of. Now, we do have some problems with nutrition, lactose intolerance. We've got allergies. There's a degenerative disease. There's no doubt that there's an outcome that comes from that. But how many people every year are sickened by pasteurized milk? And how many people are sickened by raw milk? I mean, after all, if we're going to make a test here, we ought to compare oranges and oranges and some apples and apples. Now, I've been drinking raw milk all of my life, save for 20 years when I moved to the city. My grandmother started me on raw milk when I was a wee lad. That's because I'm from California and you can still get raw milk there. Then they put pasteurized milk in by law in 1950, And you can still get certified raw milk in California, but it's more of a trick. I mean, it used to be everywhere, but now you got to know where to go get it. So the moral to the story here is that across the country, nationwide, most people do not drink raw milk today. So when we go back to 1945, let's take a look at some statistics. The propaganda that pasteurized milk is safer than fresh, raw, certified milk can be easily put to rest. In 1945, there were 450 cases of infectious disease caused by raw milk. So if you got a pen and paper there, write it down, 450 cases in 1945 caused by raw milk. Now, at that time, raw milk was more prevalent than it is today. In other words, more people were drinking raw milk in 1945 than were drinking pasteurized milk. Now, today, more people drink pasteurized milk than drink raw milk. So in order to compare oranges and oranges, let's get our numbers straight here. Now, there were 1,492 cases caused by pasteurized milk. So that's 1,492 cases by pasteurized milk in the same year, 1945. At a time in history when more people were drinking raw milk than were drinking pasteurized milk. So in 1945, your chances of getting sick from raw milk was less than it was from pasteurized milk. So let's just take 1492 and divide that by 450. And the answer is 3.31, it's 3 1/3. So there were 3.3 people getting sick from pasteurized milk to every one person getting sick from raw milk. Now, that oven by itself would tell you that the raw milk is safer than the pasteurized milk, even in 1945. Now, going on, there was one case of disease for every 12,400,000 quarts of pasteurized milk consumed, and one case of disease for every 18,900,000 quarts of raw milk consumed. In other words, you could drink 6,500,000 more quarts of raw milk than pasteurized milk without getting sick. So I put the numbers up here. It's 12 to 18. That's 3 to 2. So your raw milk was safer for you than your pasteurized milk in 1945. And we knew that then, and we know that today. And that's when not all of the milk in 1945 was certified raw milk. Certified now is different than raw milk. You got raw milk and you got certified raw milk. What Dr. Campbell is promoting here is certified raw milk. That is, that the dairy has to be certified clean. Now, I got a dairy, but my dairy isn't certified clean. Now, Altadena Dairy out in California, they're certified clean. My milk is raw milk, but there isn't anybody supervising me. There isn't any third party coming in here and snooping around to see how clean I am. So you don't know how clean my milk is. All you know is that I'm producing raw milk and I'm a nice guy. But Altadena Dairy, not in California, for instance, their milk is certified raw and certified clean because they've got a board that comes in and certifies them and says, we inspected these guys. We're looking over their shoulder all the time. Now, in the pasteurization business, they have what they call dairy inspectors. The dairy inspector comes by once a month, and he looks at your operation. Hell, your operation is always in compliance because we have a standard that we follow. Your dairy may be dirty, you know, but we have a standard that we follow. And as long as we're following that standard, hey, we're clean. Listen, boys and girls, the eggs that are being produced up here on this farm are meeting all the standards. The fact that they've got salmonella in the eggs is just a factor of the manufacturing process. They've got inspectors that come by. Those guys are running their operation, and they're running their operation within the guidelines of the law. When they're picking spinach, when they're cooking hamburgers on the grill, they're doing it within the confines of the law. They're meeting all the standards. Hell, the health department comes in and looks at their store every month. Now, that's not where your problem is. The problem is in the industrialization of your food processing process. That's where your problem is. When we have little small guys by the millions that are producing little quantities of milk, if my milk is dirty, it only affects a few people. My God, this egg operation up here, when their eggs are getting bad, they had to recall, I don't know, billions of eggs. Billion with a B. It was not just a handful. They represented a 20% of the eggs produced in the country. So when one of those plants goes haywire, it affects a lot of people in a hurry. Whereas when you have millions of little guys producing just a little bit of milk, you know, when one guy goes haywire, it affects just a few people. When you get a big operation that goes haywire, it affects a lot of people in a hurry. So that's one of the downsides of having these industrial farms. Now, the official report reads, pasteurization charge. This is 1945. There was an epidemic of food poisoning in Phoenix, Arizona. An official report reads, pasteurization charts show the milk was properly pasteurized and leads to the assumption that toxin was produced in milk while it was stored without refrigeration and was not completely destroyed by pasteurization. 300 very sick people from pasteurized milk. In Great Bend, Kansas, same year, 1945, they had 468 cases of gastroenteritis from pasteurized milk. Now, this was traced to unsanitary conditions in the dairies, unsterilized bottles, improper pasteurization, 9 people died. Which I want to tell you that for all the milk that's being produced, 9 people die, and that's just, you know, a pimple on the elephant's trunk. Now, of course, for the 9 people that died, it's pretty damn serious. But when you're talking about an industrial process over here that kills 9 people and feeds 300 million people with a billion meals a year, that's a hell of a job that these guys are doing. So, you know, let's give credit where credit's due. Now, in June of 1982, over 172 people in a 3-state area in the southeast were stricken with an intestinal infection. Over 100 required hospitalization. The infection, which caused severe diarrhea, fever, nausea, abdominal pain, headache, was caused by pasteurized milk. Now, remember, this book was written back in the 1980s. I think it was 1982 or 3 or something like that. Let me look it up. Let's see where we're at here. William Campbell Douglas, remember the milk, 1985. William Campbell Douglas, All Rights Reserved, Copple House Books Incorporated. So in 1982, bringing it up from 1945 to 1982, 55, 65, 75, 40 years later. So about 40 years later, by the time he writes this book, you have been led to believe that pasteurized milk has just solved all the problems in the world. It hasn't. It's just that when pasteurized milk causes some kind of a disease or something like that, hell, they cover that up. They don't report that. It's got to be something big. To get a report out, it's got to be something big, like a billion eggs or something like that. A hamburger chain over here, you know, that's killed 9 people, you know, that'll get the news. Now, does it happen today? Well, of course it does. But doctors and parents are unlikely to blame milk because, after all, it's pasteurized. They'll blame Junior's gastroenteritis and diarrhea on anything and everything but contaminated pasteurized milk. So the next time you have diarrhea, test your pasteurized milk. I mean, it's a wild new idea, but just think about that. The toxin from bacteria largely responsible for diarrhea, it's called the enterotoxin, and it's largely unaffected by pasteurization. If raw milk is contaminated to a significant degree, you can tell it instantly from the smell and the taste. But pasteurized milk may be seriously contaminated with no telltale odor at all. So consumer reports of January 1974 revealed how shoddy milk production is in the United States. Out of 125 samples of milk and milk products, 44% proved to be in violation of state regulations. Hey, 1974, fairly recent year, you know. And then 44% of the milk was in violation of state regulations. It's kind of like water. If you were to go out right now today and test all of the water from all of the water districts here in the Ozarks, you'd find about 30% of them. That was the latest number I saw. 30% are in violation of state standards. They've got too many bacteria in the water. And hell, they're putting poison in there. They're putting chlorine in there. Now, once in a while, they'll send out what they call a boil order. When it really gets bad, they'll say, hey, you know, the water district has to clean up its water. They got to go in there and they got to do something. So if you think that everything meets state standards over here, you need to wake up here. When Mid-America Dairies, which is our dairy operation here in the Midwest, in their big manufacturing plants, just like Swift or Armour or any of these big meat packing plants, they're operating within the standards that are set down by government. They're dirty, filthy, industrial institutions that manufacture your hamburger, your meat, and your milk. But they meet the standards, and as long as people aren't getting sick, you know, we'll let it slide. There's an old story that says, you know, if you want to know something about your meat, you don't want to see how it's being made. You people don't want to see how sausage is made. You don't want to see how milk is made. And it's not on the dairy that the problem is. It's in the manufacturing process. It's when it leaves the dairy farm. Hell, it's raw. It's clean raw milk when it leaves the dairy farm. It's when it's adulterated in these huge manufacturing operations. That's where your problems come in. So a consumer report in January of 74 revealed how shoddy milk production is in the United States. Out of 125 samples of milk and milk products, 44% proved to be in violation of state regulations. The quality of a number of the dairy products in this study was little short of deplorable. Consumers Union, reporting in June of 1982, stated that the fecal bacteria called coliforms were found in many samples tested. Some had counts as high as 2,200 organisms per cubic centimeter. Raw certified milk must contain no more than 10 coliforms per cubic centimeter. Okay, so let's measure that up. If you've got certified raw milk, this is where the milk is being produced here in controlled conditions, raw milk, you can have 10 coliforms, C-O-L-E-F-O-R-M-S, some kind of bacteria, coliforms. You can have 10 of those in 1 cubic centimeter, 1 cm, of milk. All right, now, if it's pasteurized, you can have 2,200. 2,200. Well, let me ask you this. Do you want to be drinking or eating coliforms in your milk? If the answer is yes, pasteurized milk is the product for you, because they're allowed 2,200. Now let's take 2,200. That's 2,200 and divide that by 10. They're allowed to have 220 times more of these coliforms in the milk and still sell it over the counter, still be within the legal guidelines. You see what industrialization does? The same thing is true with your hamburger. These guys are operating within the standards. It's just that the standards are so damn shoddy that nobody's reported to you before. All right, now, if you're producing raw certified milk, by God, they're trying to put you out of business. There's no way we can get this down to zero. And so they say, well, we'll let you have 10. So they're operating at around 5. Now, they're not producing milk with 2,200. This pasteurized milk doesn't have 2,200 in it, but it's got 1,000, you know, or 1,200 or something like that. And that's acceptable because we're pasteurizing the milk. In other words, we are producing dirty milk. If the raw milk producer that's producing and selling certified raw milk can produce no more than 10, so can the dairies that are producing for the pasteurization. They can produce the same clean milk, but they don't. And they don't have to, because we're going to pasteurize it. That's going to protect all you people. But wait a minute. Sometimes contamination gets into the pasteurized milk, and that's what makes it lethal. So as we stated earlier and confirmed by Consumer Reports, the former objections to pasteurized milk are just as valid today as they were at the turn of the century. It actually promotes the production of dirty milk. It's because we don't need to clean it up. And that's because we're going to pasteurize it, so it isn't going to kill anybody. But once in a while, this pasteurized milk, with its dirty coliforms in it, it gets contaminated, and it gets out into the public, and then it kills a few. Which isn't bad. But listen, can you imagine what would happen if Altadena Dairies had some milk get out in the public and it killed 10 people? My God, the legislature would be up in arms. Why, the people would just go berserko or something like that, wouldn't they? They go berserk. And to think that we let the pasteurized guys go through this, you know, with a get-out-of-jail-free card, that's the crazy part. You know, I'm not opposed to people drinking pasteurized milk. I don't believe that little Georgie over here should get you people over here who are drinking pasteurized milk and that we want to force you people to drink raw milk. I don't care whether you people die or not. What I'm opposed to is that you zealots, you religious zealots out there promoting your pasteurized milk, absolutely insist that the rest of us have to drink that damn crap called pasteurized milk whether we like it or not, under penalty of law. That's what I object to. I think that people that want vaccinations ought to have vaccinations. I just don't want them forced on me. That's all. Oh, I want that freedom of choice. And I'm not as smart as you people that drink pasteurized milk. You people are smarter than I am. I don't deny it. But just because you're smarter than us dummies over here, what in the hell gives you the righteousness to enforce it upon us? It isn't because your milk is cleaner. It's 220 times dirtier. And you're trying to force your 220 times dirtier milk on us. I don't want it. But I'm not opposed to you drinking coliforms, if that's what you want. I'm just opposed to you compelling me to drink that dirty crap. And then you're going to sit there and say, well, by pasteurizing it, we're protecting you from typhoid. Hey, wait a minute. There's nobody dying from typhoid drinking Altadena Dairy certified raw milk. Not a case. Not one. All of the cases between 1982, when this book was written, and last night at 5 o'clock, every case is being caused by pasteurized milk. It's not caused by raw milk. You got the same phenomenon going on here with polio. Here in the United States, we used to have a thing called polio, infantile paralysis, and so we came up with a vaccine. And in 1955, they're shooting up everybody with this vaccine. Well, it's one of 35 vaccines they're requiring today. Now, in the United States today, we have about, on average, every year, about 70 cases of polio. Every single case of polio in the United States over the last 40 years has been caused by the vaccine. There isn't any wild polio left out there. It's all the tame stuff that comes from the vaccine maker. Now, it probably is true that 70 cases of polio out of 50 million vaccinations a year is a pimple on the elephant's trunk. But why vaccinate for polio at all? It's been eradicated. So that being the case, then what do you need it for? And it causes 70 cases of polio every year. So why cause 70 cases of polio when you can have zero cases? Well, because the vaccine manufacturers get $25 a dose. So if you take 25 times 50 million, I don't know if my little machine can handle this. Let me just plug in 50 million times 25 bucks. Oh yeah, it's $1.25 billion. So they're making $1.25 billion a year by keeping that vaccine on the market. And it only causes 70 death or 70 cases, not deaths, 70 cases. So it's divided by 70. Well, gee, we make $17,857,142.85 for every polio case in America. Would we want to give up $17,857,000 a year to eradicate polio? Hell no. Of course not. All we're talking about here, boys and girls, is money. Down on the bottom line, it's shelf life and profitability. And so I'm sitting here saying, I want to make the case for raw milk because that's what I want to drink, is raw milk. Now, in order for me to do that, I got to have my own cow. I live in Missouri. I got to have my own cow. And I do, and I drink my own raw milk. It's not certified, but it's my own. And you can do the same thing. You can buy raw milk. I think raw milk is safer than pasteurized milk, as demonstrated by the statistics that I'm showing you here. And there's much more to it. There's many other chapters. We're not going to cover all of this book. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. I just want to bring up salient points as we progress along and say, hey, have you thought about this? If you get sick, it could be caused by your pasteurized milk, but you wouldn't believe it because the milk is pasteurized and you believe it's 100% safe. Pasteurized milk is not 100% safe. If there is a milk that is 100% safe, it's certified raw milk in the year 2010. Certified raw milk is 100% safe, but pasteurized milk is not. Now, that's where we're at. So as we stated earlier and confirmed by consumer reports, the former objections to pasteurized milk are just as valid today. Pasteurization is an excuse for the sale of dirty milk. Pasteurization may be used to mask low-quality milk, and pasteurization promotes carelessness and discourages the effort to produce clean milk. That's the bottom line. All right, we're at the halfway point. Let me give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we are sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. William Campbell Douglas is the author. The book is called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. And I think you can get it at your health food store. If you don't, they might know where you could get it. If not, go online to a search engine, and you're looking for a guy by the name of William Campbell Douglas, MD. Look for his webpage, and you'll find the book. Now, it's going to be titled a little bit different, but it's going to be on pasteurized milk. It's called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. The new title, I forgot the name of it. I don't have his latest issue. This is the 1985 model. Nothing's changed from 1985, save for maybe some newer statistics. I'm sure that he'll have some newer updates rather than 1945 to 1985. It'll be something like from 1995 to 2010, something on that order. Now, Professor Posgate of the Dairy Science Department of the University of Georgia spoke out on pasteurization. He said, pasteurization has been preached as a 100% safeguard for milk. And this simply is not true. If milk gets contaminated today, the chances are that it will be after pasteurization. Pasteurized milk and raw milk are equally susceptible to contamination by pathogenic bacteria. That's very important. Milk, when it comes out of the cow, is clean. Two exceptions to that. The milk that comes out of the cow could have some kind of a bacteria in it, but it's not likely. I say could have, but it's not likely. Here's why. The cow has enzymes, and the enzymes kill the bacteria in the cow. That's to protect the calf from becoming infected, because your immune system, when you're first born, isn't working very well. So there's this theory that's been promulgated. You know, well, it could have this bacteria in it. Now, we know of two bacteria that it absolutely does not have. Brucellosis and tuberculosis are not in the cow's milk, which were two big concerns back when pasteurization came about. Secondly, there were contagious diseases such as typhoid and cholera, which killed a lot of babies. And there was a concern that, hey, this cow's milk has got this bacteria in it. Well, now we know that's not true. The raw cow's milk does not have these bad, wicked, terrible, awful bacteria when it's in the udder. But when it comes out of the udder, it becomes contaminated in a number of places. It can be in the milking machine. It may be dirty and contaminated. It could be in the open air when it goes through the cooling process in the bulk tank. And so we out here on the dairy, we have to sterilize our bulk tanks. We have to sterilize our pipelines, sterilize and wash up. It's a ritual. It's like the doctor preparing for surgery. If you've ever watched a dairyman wash up, usually, you know, if you've worked on a dairy, usually nobody does the wash up except the owner of the dairy. Now, I don't know about these big commercial operations, you know, where you've got thousands of cows in a milk shed over here, but I would imagine that that thing is programmed, that there are standards that have to be met, that there are tests that are being made. I remember when I worked for Frank Roach, and nobody washed except Frank. Nobody ever washed a milking machine. Frank washed them all. And that's so that there wouldn't be any contamination when we started milking. And he was kind of like a doctor preparing for surgery. I mean, boy, we had disinfectant. We had all kinds of stuff out there, you know, lye, Clorox. My God, the stuff that we used to disinfect. Okay, well, that's to make sure there's no contamination. Well, the same thing is going on at Mid-America Dairies, these big manufacturing plants. They buy caustic soda. They buy chlorine. Oh, my God, the stuff they buy. I mean, it'll kill you. They got big warning labels on it. It's to disinfect and kill all this bacteria, and they're following the standard procedures. But even at that, with all of the safeguards that are in place, once in a while, not often, but once in a while, a contamination will occur. And I think, you know, to be honest and to be fair with the food processing industry, we ought to give them credit where credit's due, because those guys, they're trying. And I've been a participant in, and I've been an observer of, and I can tell you, we're working on it. We're trying hard. Because if we have a bad tank of milk, they just dump it on the ground. And, you know, we're talking about thousands of dollars. And so to prevent thousands of dollars of milk or thousands of dollars worth of hamburger in the case of these eggs up here, can you imagine what that farm up there is suffering in economic loss by having to recall all of those eggs? I mean, it's bad enough that you lost the production, but, you know, it costs a lot of money to pick up those eggs, haul them, and they got to be disposed of. I mean, that's a lot of money being lost there. Those people did not want that to happen. You can rest assured that every industrial operation is doing their best to prevent that. But accidents happen, and that's what Campbell Douglas is pointing out. So if you think that pasteurized milk is 100% fail-safe, you got your head up the wrong end. It isn't. Now, about 5,000 people a year are dying in the United States, which is like, you know, 70 people getting polio. That's not very many people, and 5,000 people dying from food poisoning isn't very many people in the whole scheme of things. You know, 5,000 is a lot of people, I don't deny it, but in the total scheme of things and the percentages, it's a fraction. The food industry is doing a hell of a job. Or going back, you know, 100 years before we had all of this food safety, percentage-wise, many more people were dying. It reminds me of the horse and buggy. You know, people are talking about horses and buggies and the nostalgia of it. Well, more people died from horse accidents in 1900 per capita than die from automobile accidents today. Horses are dangerous critters. They run away, and they kick you, and they kill people. And the Amish up here, you know, in Seymour, every once in a while you'll read in the paper where some Amish kid or some Amish man is killed by a horse. Now, they don't use automobiles, they use horses, and once in a while one of them gets killed. Now, if you extrapolate that out, Douglas pointed out a very important point. The automobile did more for the health, safety, and welfare of the American public than the horse ever thought of doing. The horses were the problems. It was pretty dirty. Now, the same thing is true here of modern dairies. These modern dairies, I mean, they are clean. They are clean. But contamination occurs. And when that contamination occurs, no matter how it happens, accidentally, it causes a problem. So when a contamination of raw milk occurs and people drink the raw milk, they got sick. Today, we're making sure that that doesn't happen. And so these dairies are very, very careful. This Altadena dairy that's being talked about here in California, they're very careful about their raw milk. And the pasteurized guys are trying to do that too. But today, more people are injured and killed from pasteurized milk than raw milk per capita. The raw milk is still safer. It's just that you believe that the pasteurized milk is safer, and so you're not protecting yourself from the pasteurized milk. Now, that's another message that's coming through here with Campbell Douglas. Now, often, other than the greater infectious potential of pasteurized milk are the other disadvantages to processed milk, enough to fill up a few more chapters. But before we go on to other disadvantages of pasteurized milk, let's look at an example of the amazing protective qualities of raw milk, even when raw milk is dirty. Even when raw milk is dirty, it has protective qualities. Listen to this. Jack Mathis is the president of Atlanta's Mathis Dairy. He was invited to inspect the dairy at the Atlanta City Prison Farm and to make suggestions for modernization. He found the entire operation to be indescribably filthy. He said it looked more like an outhouse than a milking parlor. That was his first observation. The pathetic cows were in obvious pain, being milked by machines entirely unattended. Manure on the cow's hindquarters was running over the teats, the milking apparatus, and then into the milk. From the milking machine, the milk ran into an open 10-gallon can by hose. You couldn't see the top of the can because of the flies, Mathis said. It was like a beehive with flies walking in and out of the can. Jack Mathis assumed that the milk was for the prison pig farm, but it wasn't. This milk was being sent directly to the cooler in the prison dining hall, complete with cow and fly manure and fly carcasses. There, it was simply filtered through the cooler and then drunk by the prisoners. No one had gotten sick from the milk in 10 years. What a case for raw milk. Boys and girls, let me tell you, it's not the manure. It's not the flies. Jesus pointed that out to the Pharisees. He says it's not what's on your hands that's contaminating it. It's the lack of the enzymes. See, they're not suffering here from people that have typhoid, cholera, or coughing, or spitting into the milk and contaminating the milk. The natural dirt that's around over here is not your problem. It's not good. I don't like the idea of having coliforms in my milk. I just assume they weren't there. And in modern dairies, we filter all of that out. I'm telling you, that milk, when it comes out, it doesn't have any manure in it. It doesn't have any fly carcasses or parts, fly manure, feces, and so on. But yet the milk becomes contaminated because of the bacteria that is produced in this pasteurized milk. When it becomes contaminated, it comes in contact with some other source. So don't believe for a minute that it's safe. But raw milk is safe because of the enzymes in the milk that kills the bacteria. It kills the bad bacteria that's in it. Now, there is some now that it doesn't kill. In that case, back in 1900, it is true that there were a lot of deaths caused by contaminated raw milk. So let me emphasize that point again. We're not trying to belittle pasteurized milk. And the fact is, milk can be a carrier of disease. But the bad rap that raw milk has been given by its opponents, the religious opponents of raw milk, the pasteurization fanatics, is a bad rap. All right, let's go on to another part of the story over here. One Friday morning, he says, when I was in medical school, a group of 8 farm workers who had been spraying vegetables were brought to the emergency department of the university hospital. They were all dead but one. The one survivor lived only because he had been thrown in the truck upside down. The others died of pulmonary edema, that is, drowning from fluid in their lungs. This one lucky worker drained his lungs spontaneously because of being upside down, and so he survived. The chemical causing this disaster is known as an organophosphate. You wouldn't want that in your milk, would you? Well, many dairies are now feeding an organophosphate to their cattle. This chemical, known as Lincophos, ends up in the manure and poisons the larvae of the flies. Now, isn't that clever? Why maintain a clean barn when you can just dose your cows with organophosphate and let the chemically contaminated manure poison the maggots? Now, what does this dosing with chemicals do to the cow and to the cow's milk? Well, the FDA says it does nothing. They've told us that before. Remember DES, swine flu vaccine, and Oriflex? Boys and girls, the crap that we receive from the FDA and the Department of Agriculture and have received over the years has always been to preserve, to protect, and to protect the industry and not the consumer in every single case. And if you've got a case where the FDA or the Department of Agriculture has ever acted to protect the consuming public in place of the producing corporations, send me an email and tell me about it, would you? I don't know of a single case. Now, we have a lot of processes and products that are out here in the marketplace that are causing disease and cause a lot of damage, and then they're approved by the FDA or by the Department of Agriculture to be used in these manufacturing processes. I just thought I'd point that out. It's being pointed out here by Campbell Douglas. Now, the average commercial dairy farmer is interested primarily in production figures rather than quality. Now, those farmers who are sincerely concerned about the drastic decline in the quality of milk can do very little about it until the public demands a better product. The farmer sells to a vast consortium, and he has no control over the final product that may look the same as milk. But biochemically, enzymatically, and nutritionally is about as close to real milk as non-dairy creamer is to real cream. Now, you know, when you go into the restaurant, they have a little package here in a bowl on your table, and they call it non-dairy creamer. And we put that non-dairy creamer in our coffee. And they call it cream. You say to the waitress, have you got any cream? And she points to the bowl. And then you pull this out. Now, you've got to have your loop with you. And I've got one. I've got a 10-power loop. It's in a little case. I just bought it the other day. I look at coins with it. I got my 10-power loop glasses that I read contracts with. You need your loop with you to read the ingredients on the non-dairy creamer. I mean, there are chemicals in there. There isn't anything that comes from a cow that's in the non-dairy creamer that you put in your coffee. Nothing. Well, that's what's being produced, and it's called milk. It has nothing to do with milk except that it is true it came out of a cow. The original raw material came out of a cow. It was called raw milk. But from that point on, it has been changed. So the farmer wants pituitary giant freaks that produce their body weight in milk every 10 days. But the milk from these milk-producing superstars may contain excessive amounts of pituitary hormones. Now, pituitary hormones, that's what makes girls grow breasts. Now, I'm not sure that I want these pituitary hormones in my milk. Dairy farmers want to put that into the cow's feed to make the cows give more milk because that's the way they get paid. Dairy farmers don't get paid for clean milk. They get paid for gallons of milk. In fact, it's measured in pounds. So this pituitary excretion affects growth, and it's called the growth hormone. This hormone may account for the fact that each succeeding generation of Americans for the past 50 years has been taller than their parents. This excess height, although associated with handsomeness and health in our culture. See, we look at tall, blonde, and handsome, or tall, dark, and handsome. It may actually be a sign of abnormal pituitary function due to excess pituitary growth hormone from milk. Bigger is not necessarily healthier. And the independent dairy farmer producing raw certified milk is interested in quality as well as quantity. He knows that these abnormal milk producers are prone to be unhealthy and subject to infection requiring the frequent use of antibiotics, as he doesn't cover mistakes and unsanitary production methods by heat treating his milk. He is more likely to own normal healthy cows, producing less milk but without excess pituitary and other hormones or other chemicals or antibiotics. The pituitary also stimulates the production of sex hormones, and this could be contributing to the vast array of sexual problems we see today. Sexual dysfunction has become so common that the medical profession now has a separate journal to deal just with sexual dysfunction in humans. There is some connection, not yet entirely understood, between certain cancers and hormones. Pasteurized milk is apparently adding to the problem, as there is a relationship between certain types of cancer and the consumption of pasteurized milk. The pituitary hormone, TSH, stimulates the thyroid gland. If minute amounts of this pituitary hormone were to be absorbed daily from unbalanced pasteurized milk, depression of the thyroid gland could eventually result. Low thyroid function has become extremely common in this country. Some experts estimate that 50% of the people over 50 years of age have some degree of low-functioning thyroid. Could milk from pituitary giant cows be contributing to this problem? Another hormone from pituitary ADH causes water retention. Two other hormones work directly on the ovaries and testicles and may also contribute to several dysfunctions. ACTH, a powerful adrenal stimulator, can cause everything from diabetes to hypertension to Addison's disease, that's adrenal exhaustion and acne. And through the process of chromatography, see if I've got that, chromatography, we now know that synthetic vitamins are not the same as natural vitamins. Remember, for years, they used to tell us there's no difference between synthetic vitamins and natural vitamins. Oh, God, when I was a kid, I could remember that argument. Okay, that's like saying there's no way you can tell between goat blood and human blood. Well, that was true in 1900, but today we can tell. And today we can tell what the distinctions and the differences are between artificial and natural vitamins are. Now, the same thing is true here. Now, as a, I can tell you this from my experience, you know, as a dairyman and as a poultryman. When I was in the poultry business, we used to make a ton of feed. And in that ton of feed, we would put 28 chemicals that weighed 11 pounds. So 11 pounds out of that 2,000 was made up of these chemicals. There was 28 of them. One of them was arsenic. Now, arsenic in small quantities doesn't kill you. But over time, it builds up in your body fat. And all of these chemicals that we're putting in this chicken feed is designed for one thing only. That's to get more eggs out of this chicken. What does that do to people that are eating the eggs? We don't know. Hell, I don't know. I'm just the chicken farmer. And I rely upon Monsanto and Cargill and ADM to make up, and Purina, you know, to make up the chicken feed. I presume that all of these smart guys with doctorate degrees and all of these letters after their names are important people who know what the hell they're doing. Well, the same thing is true here with dairy feed. You know, we feed this dairy feed and it makes our cows give more milk, which is what we're concerned about. What does this do to you people that are drinking this milk? We don't know. We haven't got a clue. We are relying upon Monsanto and ADM and Cargill and Purina, and we hope that these people know what the hell they're doing. But we're highly suspicious. And I've made this challenge before. I'll make it again. I've never met a dairyman in all the years that I've been in and around cows. I've never met a dairyman who would drink the milk out of his own bulk tank. Now, I did hear of a lady one time. She wrote in Acres USA that they drink the milk out of their bulk tank. I did read that. But I don't know of any. I never drank the milk out of our bulk tank. We always had our own clean cow that when we got all through milking, we'd run water through the milking machines and then milk our cow for the house. We never drank the milk that we sold to you people. Now, isn't that just real special? And that from a dairyman. Hey, I'm out of time, boys and girls. I've got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.